National Football League originated in the 1920s in rural America, then moved to the cities to flourish and prosper. But each summer, the game relives its heritage. Tiny college towns across the country witness the first bloom of the NFL season.
St. John Fisher, the Bills reporting today. The late, great John Facenda there. Look what they used to do for the NFL. You know, this presentation.
Should we get some Bills highlights from last year with like this, like the old NFL music? NFL Films music.
What happened at camp last year? What was the story at camp last year?
Last year? Was there?
I mean, it was Coleman, watching Coleman, seeing how he can be a part of the offense. It was
Samuel got hurt.
Cole Bishop got hurt.
Mike Edwards got hurt, never really participated.
Yeah. Injuries, like, I don't really remember. 2 years ago, I remember that was Shakir had a bad camp. Mm-hmm. And, like, there was wonder if he was on the roster bubble. He was not. The year before that was the year that Kyrie Elam wore boxing gloves.
Yep. And got into a fight with Diggs, maybe?
No, him and Diggs, like, fought, yep. I feel like, every day for, like, 2 weeks.
It's because he held a lot.
Yeah. There's the EJ Manuel hospitality tent training camp.
Yes, great moments in camp history.
But what was last year?
There's the I think the EJ Manuel hospitality tent training camp was the same training camp where there was a primetime practice on the turf stadium, and Manuel's offense did nothing, and then Jeff Toole went in and just like lit it up.
Tool time was born.
Tool time. Don't forget tool time.
Tool time.
Yeah, I was trying to put together a training camp bingo card.
Yeah.
For this year.
Okay.
And it wasn't as easy as coming up with as I remember. You know, there's quotes like defense is ahead of the offense.
But you got to get like some turkey burger reference in on there somewhere, because that seems to be an every year thing now.
Defense ahead of the offense, that might not happen this year. The offense is fully returning. Well, a couple receivers. But the offense is back, and there's not a lot of change. And the defense is going through a lot of changes with personnel. But whatever, it's something you always say at camp. I've got a Bills training camp bingo board. I've got Sean McDermott clapping is the free space. You know, we're gonna see that a little bit. Hearing Bobby Babich yell, you hear that from the sidelines.
He's fiery. He's fiery out there.
Curtis Samuel lines up in the backfield.
Okay.
Keon Coleman leaping, spinning end zone catch.
Yep.
A lot of those.
That should be on there. What about like a fans fall in love with guy that has no chance of making the team spot?
Who's that going to be this year?
That's the thing. Should we pick someone specific though, or just pick like anyone? It could be anybody.
Although last year,
unnecessary Frank Gore Jr. hype.
Okay, that might be it.
That might be a good one.
Last year, one of the guys to fall in love was Joe Andreessen, and he made the team, and he's still here.
That is true. Like is he like the first one of those to really make it? Like guy that everyone learned about and fell in love with at camp and then in the preseason, but then he actually made the team.
Yeah.
Because like you go back to your Brandon Rileys of the world, like those guys never made the team. Most of them, I don't think.
Yeah, the bingo board.
Normally,
they're
offensive players. Also,
that's right. Lionel Gates is a name I always remember. Running back Lionel Gates.
Okay.
Louisville.
Yep. Joik Bell was one of those.
Okay.
Although he actually had a career in the NFL after he left the Bills, so maybe they should have put him on the team.
Great moments in camp history.
But yeah, like this year, is that going to be, you know, I don't even know who it would be. It would be Frank Gore Jr. again. Their backups are the same. Caden Prather, there you go. The seventh round receiver that they picked. He's going to light. If he has a couple of big preseason catches, he's got like no path to making the team, basically.
Yeah. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Thanks for watching, texting, tweeting, whatever. If you're watching this on the YouTube stream, go ahead and give us a like and a subscribe. And remember, we're going to be at camp tomorrow. Owen, we're practicing today to set things up to broadcast live from camp, not just like we normally do, but now you're going to get to see our faces from St. John Fisher. So a YouTube stream from Fisher, right? That's the plan. We should be up and running tomorrow.
Yep, that's right. We're going to be getting the cameras out there. We got a new setup. We got some new lights. We should be getting it rolling, and we're super excited about it. Should be super fun to get
lights
some,
in there too, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got new,
light us up.
Yeah, we got lights, and it's going to be pretty awesome. Super excited.
People are going to see, what do they see at camp? What do we do? What do we do? Anything different? It's kind
of
like this.
You'll see the background of us, which is generally can be players walking in.
By. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's the one thing.
There's some activity
when it's really behind us. When it's really nice out, I often say to you, it's too bad we can't do the show outside. When we're at camp, we do. We will be.
It's awesome.
Outside under a pavilion.
It's not quite college game day, though. Like, it's not.
Well, we don't have. Right.
We don't quite have that production. Could we? Value
we're there way too early in the morning, also, for any. The
college game day gets there pretty early, and there are people that wait overnight. Yes. They might be not on the air, but college game day's got people behind them, so. If anybody wants to show up with, you know, a big sign that says whatever and stand behind us, well, you might not be able to, but we'll welcome you anyway. 803-0550.
Depending on the sign.
It just occurred to me, here's how, you know, football season's starting. I haven't texted him or called him about it, but Howard's got to pick the Bills soon. The pre-camp pick the Bills.
You want to cold call him?
I thought about it.
Just cold call him?
Maybe we'll
on
just do
air?
That today. Give him time to wake up.
A little
up.
Bit later?
Yeah.
Oh, a good text on this. Maybe should Josh Allen wearing a visor during practice be on the bingo board? He always wears like the dark visor that is not allowed in games.
That's right. The new helmet.
Just to look cool.
Will he wear the new helmet to camp number one? They're having a new helmet. He does it at the blue and red scrimmage.
Do other teams do that with alternate helmets?
I don't know.
Will they wear them at practice?
You get a red jersey and throw on a... The second helmet.
Because they get, it's like, this is the helmet they wear during the season.
Yes.
So, do they do that to get used to the new helmet? That's a good question. I feel like they would. I feel like that you would want to get used to your other helmet that you're going to wear during the season, so why wouldn't you wear it during practice?
We're waiting for the Bills' new helmet, which a helmet comes out today. So, we don't know what time yet. Maybe we get some information on that. There's been some reporting about that it won't be red. We don't know if that's true or not, but today we find out. The Bills enter a room that I feel like I've wanted them to be in. A lot of teams are having uniform fun in this rivalry series. It's a chance for the Bills to get involved, and a new helmet comes today. I don't know if it's related to the rivalries. I don't think it is, but if it is, in fact, white and gray, I'm going to start to think that it is.
Hmm.
But we'll see. Who knows? Alex in Rochester. Hey, Alex. Good morning.
Hey, Jeremy, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Morning.
Wanted to touch on the Bills and Cook and Hard Knocks, and then I had one tiny, tiny Sabres point. But first thing on Cook and the Bills, Mike and Bulldog yesterday were talking about Hard Knocks and how that might affect his negotiation strategy. And they were looking at it through the lens of, hey, if Cook really wants to make a statement here, he should hold out and get all the national viewers on Hard Knocks and fans potentially taking the team's side. And I think they were missing one point here is that, like, I'm pretty sure the Bills have either full or a lot of editorial control on Hard Knocks.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray Davis is a guy waiting in the wings. Ray Davis is a guy that's perfect for that show. Just based on his background and his story. So I actually think that Cook holding out that strategy might not work. I think it's better for him to come to camp. But we'd just like your thoughts on that. And then one small thing on Sabres Embedded, that line that Yarmo had about paintings, it's easier to
tame a tiger than to paint stripes on a pussycat is what he said. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not. Not at all. Are you kidding? If you had the chance, wouldn't you rather put stripes on the cuffs of that than tame a tiger? Tiger? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Alex. Alex, we'll get to that. The Sabres embedded there in a minute. So on the Cook thing, I did hear this conversation. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, asking Sal about the potential for a hold in, and would Hard Knocks be a spot where maybe Cook sees and his agent would see an opportunity? Hey, we can steal a headline. We can make a point here if he were to sit out. Two practices, hold in for two practices.
Mm-hmm.
He can kind of let the NFL world know, put the Bills on notice, and then just go practice. But the story would get out there, he wants a contract.
Yeah.
You could do that, I suppose. You never know what an agent's tack is going to be or what the strategy will be. The fact that he showed up to mandatory minicamp, he said, I don't want to get fined. And that makes sense.
Right.
Now he shows up. Could we have a hold-in scenario tomorrow? I guess we could.
I don't think there's any chance of a holdout.
No.
I mean, he's not going to want that with the fines anyway.
No. But a hold-in would just be he's here and he's not taking part in team drills.
The fact, though, that he did things at minicamp, like, I guess he could hold in. I still am so, like, weirded out by what that would look like on the field. He's going to stand off to the side in sweats. Like, I guess on this team, it just feels different maybe for that than on other teams, but it happens on other teams, and everybody gets along fine after. Jamar Chase skipped like 3 weeks of training camp last week, didn't he? He just stood on the side, didn't do anything, and then what happened when the season started? Everybody was fine. Got along great. So I guess he could do that, and everybody would be okay, but I'd be surprised. I think I'd be surprised if he wasn't just on the field doing things tomorrow without a contract.
And to the point about like Ray Davis and his story, he's a great story. The Bills, though, they're very good, obviously, at the culture they've created, the family, the type family finger quotes there. But don't forget, great for Hard Knocks and great for the room and great for that is all well and good until it comes time to pay a guy. And if he's worth more than he's not worth his whatever, if the player thinks he's worth a lot more than the Bills do, or they're not willing to go to a certain number on a contract, then the player that is the great story and the player that is perfect for the room goes somewhere else.
Right.
We'll always have the best example of this will be Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis will always be the answer to this question.
Mm-hmm.
They love this guy. Could they let him leave? They let Gabe walk because they thought he wasn't good enough to get the salary he was going to get on the open market. Gabe got it, didn't last, and is still looking for a team now.
He's not on a team.
He's not on a team.
You could have him for free, basically.
And you wonder if there's an injury to somebody in training camp, are they going to call Gabe Davis? It wouldn't stun me.
If he hasn't signed anywhere.
Like right now, I don't think he could make this team, but he was their Iron Bill, right? The guy that won all the awards for working out in the offseason, everything about the culture. He's a captain. He's amazing for all that stuff. And then it got to, well, do you want to give him $13 million a year? No, we don't want to do that. So,
which ended up looking very much like the right decision.
Sure.
He had 200 yards last year for Jacksonville, and right now he's not on a team.
Right.
Like, I kind of would be surprised if he's not on one by the start of the season, but maybe.
We're going on, if you want to go 2 years in a row now, we're going on 2 years in a row where a prominently featured Bills receiver is not on a team by the next year.
Right,
Cooper. Amari Cooper right now is not on a team.
Yeah.
You know, you could say that not signing Gabe was the right move, and that's probably, there's no doubt about that. Like, if they had signed him, that would have been a mistake. But, you know, why do we always talk about receiver? Because it was pretty clear they probably needed somebody additionally while Davis was still here.
Right.
And they didn't really do that outside of Trent Sherfield and Deontay Hardy. But to get back to the initial point, it's they love a guy. They'll love loving a guy.
Mm-hmm.
They'll love Connor McGovern, and they'll love Osiris Torrance, and it's time to pay those two, and the salary cap's real, and it comes down to, who gets paid? Does Cedric Van Pran Granger look like he's ready for that job? Because if he is, then Connor McGovern is going to go get a big contract somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or if they pay McGovern, are they going to say sorry to Osiris Torrance because we can't pay everybody on the offensive line?
Yeah. You know what is interesting, though? There is one guy that is able to withstand all of that while only being pretty good.
I know who that is.
It's Knox.
Yeah.
Knox is not...
too important. He's too important, and he has never had to...
Yeah. But he's also not a great player.
No,
like we're talking about with Davis or like any of these other guys.
Right.
But
like if he went somewhere else, what kind of numbers would he put up? It might not look much different than what happened with Gabe, where the production goes down. He plays a ton. They value him. They extended him really early and it was quick. It's like boom, here's a contract. And since extending him, they've just been restructuring it and moving it and moving it and extending it, right? Like
since extending him, he has 497 yards.
For how much a year? $14 million a year?
In two seasons on this new contract. Yeah, for whatever. It's like, at the time, he was like one of the top 10 highest paid tight ends in football. I don't think that's still true, but he's close.
Yeah.
Three touchdowns.
Yeah. Like, which is, that's more than Kincaid in two years.
His role is more about all this stuff that you're like, not Iron Bill like Gabe Davis, but it's the locker room and it's the relationship with Josh and it is like what he does for others more. And does he block? Right? Like he does that, right? Yeah. Like he's important to the run game because he's doing some of the dirty work that Kincaid's not going to do. So there's more than just what's his role in the pass game. But he got paid after the big year in the pass game. That's what got him paid. And then it's not there anymore. But he's so there, really, especially when you already have one guy like that on your books that is giving you all that stuff that you love and he's a leader. But he's only pretty good. Like there's, you can't just pay all of those guys,
right?
Which is why you can't keep Gabe Davis at $13 million when you're already paying Dawson Knox, whatever you're paying him. What is the number? 8, 9, 10 on Knox. If Knox wasn't under contract, and they had paid Gabe Davis and he caught 600 yards last year, you know, you might feel like that's more okay. And Cook, I don't know where Cook falls into on that though, because Cook is not. I think he's better in these areas than he was as a rookie, but he's not seen as, like, the leader in that room. Or, like, he's one of their veteran presences, but I wouldn't say that anyone talks about him on the same level that, like, Allen or Knox is.
One of the things that happened to Dawson Knox, of course, was drafting Dalton Kincaid, and Kincaid talked about this in the Tyler Dunn piece where he spoke with Tyler Dunn at GoLongTD.com saying that Knox had been such a great friend and mentor and teammate and colleague, and sometimes if you get drafted, you're taking snaps away or catches away from a guy, it can get tense, but it didn't. That's really what happened to Dawson Knox's career, was they draft Kincaid, and they have a different tight end that they kind of want to throw to. I mean, I thought Knox was perfectly fine in his productivity.
Yeah.
Still, like, you might be right about being overpaid. It's a 3-year deal worth about $10 million per year. His cap hit this year is 14.5.
Yeah, like that is as a monster, that's not great.
That's a monster cap hit. And at the end of this season, there's an out. If they were to move on from Dawson Knox at the end of this year, they would save about $11 million in cap. That's a big number. But wouldn't you just guess that they restructure
they
and
will,
keep him again?
They will absolutely extend
like, him. He'll just...
They'll extend him and spread it out.
Yeah, I think he'll just keep humming. He's got two void years at the end of this thing already that they would have put on somewhere along the way in a restructure. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's more for him than just the yards. But, I don't know.
We got to all this on James Cook and Ray Davis.
But because really, like, I think part of it is how many guys do I want to pay that are pretty good?
Which is a model that the Bills... Did you see who did it? Steven Ruiz, The Ringer? Who did the roster rankings yesterday? I think it might have been Steven Ruiz. Top rosters in the NFL.
Oh, there also was the collaborative, the guys at ESPN did it, like Aaron Schatz and Seth Walder and Mike Clay.
That might have been the one.
Yeah.
And the Bills come in with a top five roster.
Number four.
And it is an interesting little experiment here in what the Bills have done, which is, keep your good players, not great players. Not to say they haven't kept great players. They've done that too. But they have a lot of middle-tier contract guys. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about Rousseau for this too. Like, he's not your TJ Watt. He's good. Keep him.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple schools of thoughts on this. There are some teams, I think the Niners are the best example of this. The Niners are going to pay great players, and anybody else might get moved on from, and they're going to just backload with picks. Meanwhile, the Bills have a lot of salaries, like Knox with a 14.5 cap hit, and Shakir and Palmer and Samuel. Like, the Bills really do have a lot of money invested in these weapons, because it feels like they are almost buying floor over ceiling, right? They want guys they trust, guys they think are good enough, and in a lot of ways they've been right about that in the way that they've built their roster. Because here they have a top five roster. And yet, if you look at all of the rankings of the top players and Pro Bowlers and all this, they don't come in the top five in that department. Other teams have more players maybe near the top, but the Bills are consistently mentioned as like a top five roster because of the way they built it. So for better or for worse, it's kind of like a balanced build.
Yeah, because what's interesting is if you look at their – right now, you look at the Bills' top, let's say, eight cap hits on the year this year. And how, like, who are they and what their roles are on the team? Like, okay, so Allen's number one, and obviously that's Josh Allen. Number two is Deion Dawkins.
Great.
That fits.
Great player.
That fits.
Yep.
Number three is Dawson Knox. He's the third highest cap hit.
Yeah.
Not the third most important player. Matt Milano is number four. Ed Oliver is number 5. Daquan Jones is number 6. Connor McGovern, Curtis Samuel. Those are your next two after that. Like, in your top 8, I got 4 or 5 guys that are being paid that aren't really critical. Like, right now, that would be Jones for that. Sure. That would be Knox for that. That would be Samuel for sure on that front. Like, these guys are, you know, they're not going to play, but they are not, like, they're not critical to what's going on.
And cap hit might be a little bit loose on that because
that can be where you are in your contract.
Right, because Knox's AAV was less than 10, but the cap is 14 because they've moved it.
And Daquan Jones is higher because he's at the end of his contract.
Right.
It was lower at the beginning.
Yeah.
And like, last year, Daquan Jones was 2.8 on their cap, and this year it's 9.4.
Yeah. And isn't this kind of a point, as you list those out, that's why they wanted to supplement these last two drafts with a lot of picks and a lot of young players? Like, time to turn the roster over, get younger, which they've done.
Right, in a couple of years, that'll be, like, we'll see how these free agents do. Michael Hoyt, in a couple of years, is going to be one of their highest cap hits. And so will Josh Palmer, right? Those guys right now are low because they're only into year one. So that's part of the Knox conversation, though, is you want to keep them around? Because next year, I can't imagine you're going to want to keep them around at $17 million on your books. You'll either want to move on from that, or more likely, you'll want to spread that out and do like another 3-year deal and make him a player that's going to be on the Bills for his whole career.
803-0550. A Rasul Douglas sighting. Have you seen the team that might bring him in? We'll get to that next. I'll mention that for you. And Sal, coming up 8 o'clock. Jeremy and Joe, Bills report to camp today. First practice is tomorrow. So happy football season. We are getting started. 26 of the 32 teams report today. Already had 2 in. A couple more coming with I think it's the Falcons and the Steelers that are the last. 28 of 32 report today. Yeah, camp has arrived. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. That Rasul Douglas note, where he might land, coming up in a moment.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money. The other thing I would say is contracts are 4 or 5 years. There's a lot of water under the bridge if you step out there and do something in the first 2 or 3. You can get hit by a car. Seriously. And so there's a lot to look at over a lot of years that could make a big difference. Have you ever heard of any clubs committing to players and then they didn't pan out after they committed to them? We have.
Yeah, all right, dude. Jerry Jones.
Someone has got to take the wheel from him, right?
Listen.
Someone's got to take the wheel from this guy.
You can get insurance on these contracts. A lot of teams
do.
Yes, right.
Forgot about that from last year. Teams get cap space from doing that.
Yes, that's right.
He's 82 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. He's the owner. What are you going to do? Is his son going to do it? Like, this guy should not still be running an NFL franchise, right? Not like with player personnel. I'm not saying he can't be the owner.
Arguably, maybe should not have ever been doing that. But it's his team.
Like, why are you taking shots at your top players?
It's very odd.
I saw Parsons yesterday. Didn't he tweet something?
J.J. Watt tweeted something, and Parsons retweeted it.
Yeah, that's what happened. And J.J. Watt tweeted, anytime you could publicly take a dig at your star quarterback and your star pass rusher simultaneously right before the season begins, you got to take it.
Yep.
And then Parsons retweeted that. Jeez.
I mean, that point that Jerry Jones makes right there is like a bad phone call to a sports radio station. Guys, he could get hit by a
car.
Oh, all right. Thanks for the call, Jerry. Okay. Rasul Douglas is garnering interest from the Dolphins. Okay.
I saw last week Mina Kimes said they have the worst secondary in the NFL. So,
how's that going to pan out for them?
They could use somebody. Was he so bad last year? He was bad in the Ram game, right? He got bodied by Puka Nacua a couple of times. He did not do what he did the year before. I mean, Aaron Schatz, I remember talking to after last season, after the 2023 season, saying that Douglas was like the best corner in football in the second half of the year, or one of them.
One thing about
the Bills traded for him.
Douglas that's really interesting about his timeline. When they traded for him, he made a bunch of plays.
Yeah, he was great.
He had 4 interceptions 2 years ago. Last year,
yeah,
the year the Bills defense got all their takeaways, he did not have a single interception.
That's wild.
So he's supposed to be this guy.
Or forced fumble. No, well, he had one.
One forced fumble?
One forced fumble.
So he's a guy that kind of got away with maybe not being the most athletic at this point in his career because mm-hmm. he was smart and he knew what to do and he could make big plays for you. And last year he did not make big plays, really, while the rest of the defense did. So anyway, he might get a spot in Miami. That's the chatter.
And I Elam gets remembered for getting torched by the Chiefs in that playoff game, but I don't know. No one needs to do this. No one's going to want to do this, so I'll do it for you. Douglas got torched in that game, too. If you were to go back and watch that game, you would notice, like, oh, yeah, Elam's getting lit up, but that guy was getting lit up almost as often. And he was supposed to be out there. Maybe he had tougher matchups because Benford wasn't out there. Maybe they left him on an island because they felt like they had to protect Elam. I don't know, but he did not play well in that Chief playoff game. He looked old, and they wanted to run man coverage, and he could not cover guys in man coverage. So I don't think he was terrible. He's probably a corner you have to be to protect at this point. He also wouldn't make me think the Dolphins, if Mia Kimes thinks they have the worst secondary in the league and they signed Rasul Douglas, I'm not sure I should really think they're much better.
Yeah. 803-0550 is our phone number, 1-888-550-2550. Toby in Buffalo. Hey, Toby.
Hey, first thing about the bingo card, is it a phrase that's going to involve food, like the buffet's still open or get a ticket to the cookout or something? Is that going to be our catchphrase related to food on the bingo card?
You mean about James Cook we're talking?
No. Like everyone eats and then they're going to just, you know, push it into the future. The phrase is going to involve food.
I see. I think they're sticking with everybody eats, though, because Josh Allen has a hat.
He did wear a hat.
He has a hat that says everybody eats. I think that is just their slogan from now on.
The other part about James Cook is, you know, is any of this going to affect into either the personnel groupings, the play calling, or him making a financial decision according to, like, maybe not jumping over the pile or running out of bounds at the 2? I mean, do you think any of that's going to come into play during the season? Because that's my concern as well.
No way. Not at all. I don't worry about James Cook doing that at all. I mean, he wants to get paid. I think he'll be fine.
I think he's also already somebody that if he's near out of bounds, does duck out of bounds, because a lot of running backs do that now. Right?
Yeah, it's a smart thing to do.
If it's the difference of 1 yard, these guys don't want to take the extra lick and risk not being out there for the most important games. So, no, I wouldn't really be worried about it, personally.
Thanks, Toby, for the phone call.
By the way, I did look. So, in that Chief Conference Championship game, how Bill's corners did, again, a lot of man coverage. Mm-hmm. And so, Kyer Elam targeted, this is by Pro Football Focus, maybe there's one where he was near and they didn't credit him, whatever, so take it with a grain of salt.
There's going to be a problem with the nearest defender when targeted, because there's that one play where Elam is the guy that's targeted, but he's 30 yards away because he fell.
So like that one maybe doesn't count then?
What do you do on that one?
Because they have him as being targeted 3 times in that game and giving up all 3 catches for 36 yards.
Okay.
Do we feel like that there was the one play in there that was more than that?
Mm-hmm.
Douglas let up 3 for 60 in that game. So,
tough.
Again, maybe there's one Elam catch that's not on there, but the Bills did not have the coverage in that game at all from anybody. Hamlin, too, by the way. A lot of numbers on here.
Sal joining us at the top of the hour. Let us see the helmet, Bills.
I pulled up some, if you want to go real throwback like the Steelers did, there's a bunch of 40s and 20s and 30s old Buffalo Bisons, Bills, All-American stuff, if you want to go that far back. There's one that looks like, so we talked earlier about the Bills in 1960 wore a silver helmet with numbers on it,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of looks like the Lions a little bit. They also wore, I guess in the 1920s, they wore black and orange. Would that be too much of a shock, though, to the system?
Look like traffic cones?
They kind of look like black and they kind of look like Halloween themed, if you will. It'd be too much of a shock to it. I mean, the Steelers' colors are at least the same when they go back to the 30s. Although, do you remember the Eagles wore blue and yellow throwbacks? They wore jerseys that they had worn like 100 years ago, and they were like blue and yellow, like totally different color scheme than to what they wear right now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They had that Delaware, Michigan helmet to them, too.
Yeah.
They're pretty rough.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't think Eagle fans liked them.
No, they were pretty rough.
At all? Like, really light blue and really golden yellow. Yeah, like, I got Donovan McNabb wearing one of these things, and it's like,
and the Packers wear a dark blue and yellow once, too. Who is it? The Lions? Somebody has a really...
The Packers have a navy throwback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How come the...
That they've worn.
You know, now that we've kind of got onto this today, it's kind of wild that the Bills have never gone back to a 60s uniform for a one-off or something.
But they do, like, that is the Standing Buffalo.
But that's
right?
Not...
Like, the Standing Buffalo is 61 to 72 or something.
Sure. The one before that.
Maybe the one they wore in 60.
Maybe you wore it for 1 year, but... I mean,
right.
That's
probably why, right? The reason is that you only wore it for 1 year.
I don't know. The Standing Buffalo uniform, the helmet is the star. The uniform itself is,
yeah,
it's just a different shade of blue.
And the stripes are a little bit different, I think. But, right, otherwise, it's not like totally. That's why the red helmet would make sense, because that 90s throwback look, that's a different shade of blue. That's like one big solid white stripe versus like a bunch of little ones, which is your 60s one. Like, it looks different than your 60s jerseys, yep, by a lot. And obviously the red helmet is the huge difference.
Do you know I watched a random Bills drive? Because in years like these years, we forget so many games. And it came up on my feed, I don't know where, like one of my social, the Bills game-winning drive against the Dolphins last year in Buffalo. What do you remember about that game? Bills-Dolphins, you might remember Poyer, Hurts, Keon Coleman gets blasted with a 15-yard penalty, right?
I think I remember that also wins them the game, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So it came up on my feed, like, watch the Dolphins and Bills go late. I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to sit down and watch 5 minutes of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dolphins, sure enough, they go 11 plays, 81 yards. This game ended up being kind of a shootout in the second half.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah, that's the game with the long Ray Davis touchdown, right?
Yeah.
Like a 60, 70-yard Ray Davis touchdown.
Yeah, the score, Miami takes a 13-12 lead. And then the game goes like this. Touchdown, 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 field goal to end it.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
The Bills, who were amazing last year, the Dolphins, who were trash, kind of.
How many games did they win last year? Eight? They weren't great.
They weren't trash, but...
They weren't great.
They were far, far behind.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's Miami, 11 plays, 81 yards. And then the drive to win it for the Bills. This is ultimate, you know, scoreboard, who cares, you won the game drive. But after it, it's just kind of wild. I'm watching every one of these plays. And it was Allen gets sacked on the first play of the drive, which is kind of wild. Incomplete short left. Neutral zone infraction. Penalty on Poyer. It was 3rd and 9 at the Bills' own 31.
On the penalty?
Yeah. Wow. That put the Bills at the 46. And do you know how many plays it took the Bills to go?
They don't kick the field goal right after?
No.
The penalty?
They're at their own 46 with 46 seconds left. And they proceed to go like 9 more plays and get 11 yards.
Wow. Because I remember Allen missing Kincaid wide open at like the 20, but I don't remember. I guess I thought that was before the penalty. Maybe it was after.
That's 3rd and 10. They kick on the next play.
Okay,
but they go to 7-2, 4-0 at home. But man, like this offense definitely started to get better and better and better and towards the play. But it had its moments where it was just looking like it was on a 5-yard leash, and that was one of them. 1st and 10 at their own 46, 46 seconds to go. They go 11 yards.
Yeah.
And had to kick from 60, but good for Bass because he needed that one. So anyway.
I still think if he misses that kick, there's a chance he's not on the team at the end of the season. Remember we were talking about kicker at the trade deadline? He was bad before that kick. In fact, I think he missed an extra point in that game. And that was leading into the trade deadline. And then he kicked a 61-yard game-winning field goal. It's like, okay, well, he's on the team. You're not trading for a kicker right after he does that. That kick solidified it, if it was even a question in the first place.
I don't know if he missed it. Yeah, he did miss the extra point. The Bills score on a 4th-and-1 from Miami 1, and Bass misses the extra point.
I remember him missing that extra point because maybe I was with Nate. I leaned over and said to whoever, that's it. Like, he's not making the team. Or they're trading for a kicker this week. And then an hour later, he made the 61-yard field goal. Right.
And they did bring him in for workouts, but, yeah.
There was another guy on the roster at that point, or on the practice squad.
803-0550, Sal, coming up top of the hour. We'll take a look at the defense storyline at every position. He's got a piece up at WGR550.com. We are going to be at training camp tomorrow, live from St. John Fisher. It's Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Hey, everybody. Sal Capaccio in a moment on training camp, which gets started tomorrow. Players report today. Maybe we get some guys walking in with giant bags, videos.
Yeah.
Gotta love those. Before we get to Sal, very quick thing. Ask you guys what you think about this. So I played in a golf tournament yesterday.
Okay.
With my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, and cousin. And we play in this tournament every year. It's out at Moonbrook in Jamestown. And I think every year the same thing happens to me, which is I get there. At least I'm told this, and then I find out it's not a scramble.
Mm.
It's best ball. You're playing your own two-man best ball.
Okay.
What's your reaction getting to a tournament and finding out, actually, it's not a scramble. You're playing your own ball.
Hmm.
More often than not, my reaction is, oh, sweet. Now I'm just playing golf competitively. I get a score. It's a great course. I get a chance to play a course I don't normally play. Sometimes the scramble vibe is in there, and I want the scramble.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I'm excited that it's not one.
I get that. I would be let down a little bit because I wouldn't play a scramble nearly as often.
Right.
Sure, yes. On the majority of the time, I want to be playing my own ball. But if I'm going to a tournament that's going to be one of the 4 or 5 times a year I play a scramble and it's not one of those times, then... Because I do like the strategy in it.
Of a scramble?
Yeah.
It's also nice to have teammates, but, best ball, you're rooting for each other,
yeah.
But you're not teammates in the same way.
That's right. So I would prefer that it would be the scramble in a tournament like that.
How often have you played an alternate shot format?
I've still never done that.
Oh, let me tell you.
I've not done alternate shot.
That is something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you have a bad shot and you let not only yourself down, but someone else down, that's a terrible feeling. And a scramble, whatever, somebody else hit it. Alternate shot, yeah, that counts.
That's, I need to find an alternate shot tournament this year. Need to make that happen.
Sal Capaccio coming up, other side. Camp preview number 2. Yesterday we did the offense, today we'll do the defense. A storyline at each position, focusing in on the side of the ball that we'll be watching to see how it comes together. A lot of new pieces. Sal on the defense, next.